Welcome to season 5 of Swiss Impact with Benedikt. I'm Sveta.
And I am Ben. The topic of season 5 is impactful investments. How can you make a difference with your capital?
Our guests, who are managing impact investment funds, business owners, thought leaders, will empower you to invest with impact.
In this season, we will showcase various impact investment funds who are contributing to SDGs, better known as Sustainable Development Goals, as defined by the United Nations.
There is no excuse. Shift your capital to create positive change in our world. Your children will be happier, you will feel fulfilled, and make money.
We will broadcast every Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. Central European Time, here on Swiss Impact with Banerjee. You get more when you give back.
So always invest with impact.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone.
Welcome back to our episode 9 of season 5, dedicated to impactful investment opportunities.
And great to see you all again. And I can hardly recognize myself on the screen anymore. We are so severely suntanned. But it has been a very, very warm summer, and we are feeling the effects of the global warming around the world, especially in Europe at this moment.
Yes, indeed. It seems that the number of places to travel and live comfortably are getting smaller and smaller. Fortunately, there are many projects and businesses which are creating positive impact on our world and, of course, for people. And we are bringing those to you, our dearest audience.
So please keep watching our programs. And it is available on many different channels, whether on smart TV, social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, and of course on YouTube and on Spotify. And you can just subscribe on the YouTube at youtube.com/Swiss Impact.
Absolutely. And remember to share our programs with your family and friends who are interested to learn about sustainability, impact investing, and everything what's connected to that. Now, we didn't hear many times stories, so I'd like to hear some nice story, Ben, from you today.
Okay, so I do not want to tell any stories today. I'll just summarize my meeting. I was recently last week in Finland, and for the CLC board meeting and our annual event.
For all those who don't know what is CLC, it is actually Climate Leadership Coalition, which is Europe's largest business organization on this topic.
Thank you. So at this meeting, we spoke of steps going forward, what EU is doing, how the new policies and priorities are being formulated. And during my speech, there are two points which I hammered very strongly. One of them is that CLC, as many of you know or are aware of, has the heads or the owners of few of the largest corporations of Europe. So I made it very clear to them that if only they would start paying as much attention to protecting values as they do to protecting profits, that would make a huge difference. Because if they don't, we may end up losing both. And secondly, we should start with making changes at home and in our personal portfolios. It's always easy to tell others on how to save the planet, or reuse the power of finance to save the world and advise governments to make laws accordingly. But especially when our own portfolios or our own investments are in something which is completely different, it does not work. So in conclusion, what I made it very clear is that the time to talk, the time to discuss, the time to think is over. Now it is the time we have to act. Otherwise, we will have a lot of to apologize about to our children and to our grandchildren.
Well, I would even say not just apologize, but being ashamed and at the end of our lives, regret that we didn't do what could have been easily done at current point in time. By the way, Ben, you mentioned that there were also important political leaders at your meeting.
Yeah.
We had a lot of
political
leaders,
EU commissioner, politicians, and Of course, most of the politicians are very enthusiastic about achievement on this sector and what is being done. But I also received a lot of very depressive facts and figures, especially from WMO, United Nations. I don't want to repeat them, not to depress our audience.
Right, but imagine if our governments and policymakers would be courageous enough to act and make at least some steps towards sustainable future and decreasing CO2 emissions. What would those steps be?
It's surprising. It's very simple. So basically, if we do two very minor steps, it can have a massive, massive impact on our CO2 emission. Number one, reduce maximum car speed. So make it around 100 or 120. Like now in Netherlands, I was there a couple of weeks back. It's a law that nobody can drive above 100 kilometers per hour through the day.
Oh, what would Germans say?
Yeah, exactly. And this is not only about putting speed laws, which limit the maximum speed, but also constructing the cars accordingly. So if you construct the cars, which are made to go maximum 100 or 120 kilometers per hour, you have a severe reduction of CO2 emission, but also you use much less metal to make the cars for the safety. You will require much less roads, etc. And secondly, which is also quite very easy, we just came back from Sardinia, for example, or Finland. Please take away landing licenses for air travels less than 1.5 hours, because then people will use trains or other modes of transport for this purpose. And if you can implement these two, you will have a massive decrease of CO2 emission worldwide.
Well, it sounds easy, but I think to implement this, we need to have a shift in consciousness, right? Because many people would oppose driving cars which go slow, only 100 kilometers per hour, or not wanting to give up their own comfort, which has been always an obstacle for people to evolve. Right, dear audience, please start discussing these two points with your neighbors, political representatives, and if you're convinced, maybe you can try to push it through. And with this, I'd like to welcome our guests of today, from Ben's favorite country, Finland. Welcome, Johannes and Jalmari from Soul Scout.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
How are you? Are you in Finland right now?
Yes, we are here in Helsinki, Finland, enjoying the very nice summer weather, which we still have. Summer is late now.
It's still warm, because when I was there, it was warm, but they said that the temperature will be going down soon.
It should. Eventually, it will.
Guys, it's great to have you with us today. Let me quickly introduce you to the audience who doesn't know you yet. And I'd like to start with Jalmari Talola. Jalmari, you're the CEO of your company, the Soul Scout, and you are a results-driven business leader with analytical mindset and tools for driving growth through business development, navigating continuous change, and leading people. Now, Soul Scout combines your roots in agriculture, technology, and management expertise with passion in sports, a perfect fit to build up the next big thing from Finland, which we will know what it is in a couple of minutes. So great to have you with us, Jalmari. And now to Johannes. You are Chief Technology Science Officer, Scientific Officer. And you are well-known innovator and thought leader and a sought-after lecturer in all topics combining agronomy, electronics, and soil management. You are, as I said, Chief Scientific Officer and co-founder and board member at Soil Scout. Now, a few words about Soil Scout. It is the first ever soil sensor system that allows you to place any number of fully buried wireless sensors all across an area, giving you a complete real-time underground weather map to your fingertips. it is the most advanced and cost-efficient soil monitoring solution for professionals in agriculture, golf, and sports turf maintenance. So everyone who is playing golf, stay with us today. Absolutely. So great to have you with us, guys. And we're looking forward to learn more about your company and how you're creating impact in the world.
So, Jelmari and Johannes, can you please tell us about your personal journey? About how did you come to this business and why is agronomy so important to both of you?
I can start. Thank you. And absolutely, I can. I was born and raised in a dairy and cereal farm in southern Finland. So I spent my childhood doing different farming stuff and actually doing farming for the 20 plus first year of my life. Although I never become a farmer myself, I've been always very keen to technology and I studied myself as an engineer. Then quite soon I found myself in companies providing different technology like surveying and guidance instruments, GPS, optical, and also software side. So my roots are definitely in agriculture, passion in technology. I've been in various different management positions in large-scale companies in Finland. And then at some years ago, I happened to meet this fine gentleman. I heard the Soil Scout story and the invention, and I was sold immediately. I saw the opportunity to join the team and take it everywhere in the world. And now I've been very keen and passionate within different sports. I've always been a very active person doing a lot of sports. So this nicely combines my roots and my passion, sports and then agriculture or farming.
Wow.
Thank you for sharing.
Just a question. So what did you farm?
In our home farm, as it was a dairy farm, we had grasslands, we have different cereals, mainly oak and barley. So those were the main. Now it's completely cereal, so it's oak and barley and then some rye.
Okay.
Johannes, and what's your story? How did you come to the idea also to start the company?
I did take a pretty straightforward route from a need to a solution. First of all, I'm a farmer. Currently, I'm the hands-on farmer on our family farm, which we had in 19 generations. And in the 90s, when my parents were farming, we were starting to implement a system called controlled drainage, which is a system where farmers can stop their fields from drying up too much. So when the soil has dried up enough, you can close down your drainage system. But again, you will need to open it again if soil gets too wet. And we were in a process of needing to understand our soil moistures. And there was really no feasible solutions for that task at the moment in the 90s. And that's about when I was starting my studies at the Helsinki University in agriculture technology. And my father basically told me that now that you're there, find out a better solution. And it took me 10 years to realize there is no better solution. So there is a need for one. And that's why I then later on wrote my doctoral thesis on how and why radio waves attenuate in soil and how those attenuations can be dealt with. And that was a pure academic scientific exercise. But during the process, I actually found out that with present day technology, the trick could actually be pulled off. And with my very best friend, Jussi Sirkia, who now is our CTO and is our co-founder, we built a set of prototypes, buried them underground, and we were actually able to make kind of a version of a mobile phone you would bury down in the underground, and it would call you home and tell you whether it's wet or dry, with the key being the ability to have those sensors in different locations within your field, because every location and every field is different. And once that actually worked out, it became quite obvious that we'll need to commercialize it. And this is us doing that.
So basically, this little thing that we see in your background is this is a solution of Soil Scout, right? Ah, you have
Indeed.
It in your Perfect. So tell us a bit more how this thing, how do you name it, is working and what it does.
This is the Solar Scout Hydra, as we call it. The main specification is that it's a fully buried underground sensor, which we call that you can have use it in an install and forget manner. Farmers do not want any obstacles in their fields. You could have had soil sensors connected to a weather station for ages, but that just doesn't deliver the information farmers need from within their field from different locations. So our solution is to have a sensor which measures soil moisture and temperature, and also the salinity, typically 3 times an hour, and transmits the results with the underground radio antenna we have an international patent on. So the trick was to understand why the radio waves attenuate in soil and why antennas don't work in the underground. So this antenna actually only works when it's buried. When it's in the open air, it doesn't really work that well. It's just while regular antennas do just the opposite. And while it's a sensor one would bury in the underground, it does sound like a drag to pick it up and replace batteries every few years. We put a lot of focus on designing a complete system where power management has been pushed to the maximum. So with the current sensor, it can be buried underground and it will keep transmitting 3 times an hour for the next 20 years without any maintenance.
20 years, wow. And how deep you need to bury it?
That's one of the most common questions we get. The usual answer we give is different depths, because you will not, the farmer would like to understand how the topsoil and the bottom soil are behaving differently, to see how rainwater penetrates into their soils, how groundwater is rising, to understand the agronomic needs of every location. But you can bury it as deep as a few meters, but there's always a trade-off between the depth and then the above ground range you would get. So typically our customers are using the sensors in 10 to 30 centimeters and then have our receiver box within a few hundreds of meters.
Okay. Just go ahead.
It's good to mention that there is no one else in the world that could do the same what we do. We can transfer data wirelessly from deep underground. The closest technology can penetrate maybe maximum 30 centimeters or highest maximum 50 centimeters, when we can go so deep as 3 meters and still transfer the signals above the ground. So it's very powerful technology.
I was just thinking of two things. One is, if a farmer is working with tractors or machines on the ground, will it not damage your equipment? And second is that if the thing is for 20 years, and after 20 years, if it stays under the ground, won't it, since it has batteries, so I assume it must be having also some dangerous chemicals, will it spread through, or is it won't?
The first question is easy to ask. I've had these sensors in my field for 15 years now, and I drive over them every year, multiple times. That's the whole point of the system, to be able to do all regular field work on top of the location where the sensor is. I mean, if you would have an above ground pole with sensors, that location would be avoided with farm machinery, and you would measure a location which doesn't have a crop. And that's essentially like having a rain gauge under an umbrella. It doesn't show you what really goes on.
Yeah.
The battery is a lithium metal battery, so it's not especially toxic, and the whole unit is fully encapsulated in very durable polyurethane. There is no way even water or any chemicals can ingress into the device. That's one of our main R&D achievements in the early years, to make a device which is fully encapsulated in every environment, because going deep underground in clay soils, high salinity content, that is a very hostile environment. I would rather send the equipment to Mars than bury them deep in a clay.
But what is the size of the area an individual sensor can measure around?
There's many ways of addressing what you just asked. The simple answer is that the measurement radius is just 5 centimeters around the prong, while then it becomes essential to choose the best locations to put your sensors in. We don't recommend any farmer to put in sensors every 10 meters or even every 50 meters, because that becomes a fairly expensive exercise. What we do is that in the sales process, we ask the customer of the field, the coordinates, the soil types, the activities they're doing on their fields, and we make a site plan for them where we use satellite images to identify poor areas within a field, exceptionally good areas within a field, and some locations in between or some other locations of interest, and give them an idea of where to put the sensors to get the whole picture.
And then if we look at the other sectors, let's say in golf courses, typically the superintendent, they know where they want to have them. They know where are the bad spots of their course, how much they have variations within the green. Then looking at the sports fields, there's even a UEFA and FIFA regulations, how the different areas should be monitored, which giving you a good number for the sports stadium installation.
That was one of the surprising things for me, being a farmer, not an athlete. I was thinking of a stadium. It's a 1 hectare field with just one crop. It looks the same every year. How can there be variations within that field? But it turns out there's audience. It's shading. The sun is coming from a funny direction. The rain might be diagonal as well. And they have 9 different sections of the stadium which behave completely different. So indeed, they were in need of our solution as well.
Wow. Now I come to somebody like non-farmers like us. Why should people monitor soil?
Well, I was a farmer, you know, just to add, when I was living in my other home country, we were kind of farmers. So I know how to grow veggies on my own.
There's 2 ways of answering that question. One would be you can only manage what you measure. But the other way of saying is that most of the interesting things in growing anything happens underground. Plants take nutrients from the underground. They take water from the underground. Some say, no, that there's the rain. Well, the rain goes underground before the plants make any use of it. And then the conditions in the open air are actually more uniform. And understanding what goes underground is a key for farmers to make the best crop they can with the best efficiency they can. Because more or less, the underground things are very invisible. It's very hard to tell from a soil in your hand how dry exactly is it. Does it have nutrients in it? Is it compacted or what's the deal with the soil? But having the data then reveals what each location with your field is actually up to and helps farmers to understand and then make very tangible, very visible actions to tackle the invisible things they have in their field. So basically, for a farmer, every field is a problem, and we're trying to give them the needed answers to solve those questions.
And then I come to the...
Please go ahead.
Then I come to... Because you mentioned yourself that you check the water, but you also check the nutrients. So what are the parameters that your sensor is testing or checking?
At the moment, we're measuring the water content, the moisture of the soil, the temperature, and the salinity, which in Finland is not an issue. Our post-glacial soils are not saline, but we know of places where irrigation water is not that pure, one would assume, and repeated irrigations are building up the salinity of the soils, and that's a very important parameter for them to understand in order to optimize their irrigation events. But I'm saying these are the 3 main parameters we're measuring at the moment. We get a lot of questions. Can we measure the nutrient content of the fields? At the moment, I would say that's more of a laboratory sampling method you would need. But actually, we are working in 3 different projects. where we do have the aim of providing a buried nitrate sensor for farmers to be able to not just adjust their farming inputs according to the water conditions, which is the most important one, but also being able to then adjust their fertilization to the actual site-specific need within the field. Yeah. We do have some other projects which are non-agronomic, but we can discuss those a little later.
Yeah. And we have to remember that even though there's a lot of different parameters in the soil to be measured, the oxygen, the nutrients, all the biological activity, those three, those are the fast changing parameters that can change overnight. And in that way, they cause the and need the immediate action. When then, again, some of the nutrients may take months
yeah.
to change and doesn't require that constant monitoring.
The reason I asked is since I come from Netherlands, and you must be knowing that in Netherlands at this moment, two things which are very important is phosphorus and nitrates. So if a Dutch client comes to you, can you adapt your sensor to the way that it measures the phosphorus and nitrates?
We can help with that problem in two ways, actually. First of all, the growth of a plant is always restricted by the resource, which is the shortest. Because, I mean, if you're building a house, you can't replace water pipes with electric pipes. You need always the one that's needed. Plants can't replace nitrogen with phosphorus. They can't replace water with carbon dioxide. So whichever is the limiting factor limits the whole growth. And it's very important to understand the water availability in each location of your field, because if there's water shortage, but the plant is looking good, there is really no point in adding fertilizer to a location where we can actually see from the data that the plants will not be able to make use of the added fertilizer because of the water shortage. On the other hand, the salinity does make a step response when fertilizer is being added. We have a few customers who are monitoring the salinity level during a growing season to find out what that number is when the nutrient level is good and when it's poor. It will not be able to distinguish which nutrient that is. Whether it's potassium or phosphorus, the number is still the same. But when they do an added fertilizer, they will be able to see a step response in the EC number and make sure that the nutrients have found their way to the root zone.
Mm-hmm. I have another question, very practical. You know, imagine I got your soil scout and I'm trying to dig it myself. I guess the customers can do it, right? To dig a hole and put it in the soil. How long does it take from installation to fully functioning equipment that delivers information to the customer?
That happens immediately. We have documented several cases where our worker has went into a stadium with the greenkeeper, installed the sensors, going into the coffee room and already showing the numbers on their phone and starting to discuss where are these differences originating from. And that's just a starting point when they see the current condition. It's no coincidence our sensors measure every 20 minutes because the changes in the soil are really fast when things really happen. Being able to see how different locations respond to rain or irrigation helps them then to, in the upcoming weeks, notice how their irrigation schedule is working, get to adjust it, get to optimize their water consumption. And then comes step three. When they do that over a season, they go back in next season, they start to notice patterns. Last season, I did this. Now I'm trying this. In another location, I'm trying something else, adding maybe some additives to the irrigation water, seeing the response of their activities, and get not just to optimize their current practices, but adjust and try and learn the optimal methods of producing whatever they're doing.
So basically, you can dramatically improve the crop production of farmers, right? Do you have any numbers by how much, by 20%, or is it less? So what are the numbers which are delivered to you?
That's a more complicated thing than you would imagine, because every season,
I guess so, but you're trying to understand.
The weather is different every year. and water consumption for a farmer or a stadium is different every year, trying to then filter out our quota of the change is a little bit hard. But we have quotes from, for example, a potato farmer who in March said on Twitter that from this day on, he's selling potatoes he wouldn't have without Soil Scout because of his ability to survive the drought period by irrigating smart. We've had stadiums saying they have been, thanks to our data, been able to change into less expensive ingredients in their irrigation and saved tens of thousands every year just by finding out what really goes on in the underground, because until now, you just couldn't. Mm-hmm. But we do have numbers for countries and customers, which are, you would have the number.
You mean overall number?
Our customer base at the moment?
Yeah, we currently have more than 400 customers in 40 countries. They are using more than 4,000 sensors. So various different farms, horticultural sites, sports stadiums, and golf courses. Obviously, the most known names comes from sports and golf. Famous Wembley Stadium in London. We have a Fulham Stadium. We have stadiums in the US like Miami Dolphins, San Francisco Giants, New England Patriots, and golf courses like Brook Hollow and Aloysian in the US. We have the Belfry in the UK, Sentosa in Singapore, etc. There are not so many very famous farms, but it's good to mention that we have a close collaboration with Yara International, the Norwegian fertilizer company, which is running our system in more than 50 farms across northern Europe. So yeah, that's pretty comprehensive already at this point.
That sounds great. Amazing, guys.
And do you need energy to operate your system?
Of course, there is a battery molded inside the Scout, which will last for a while. The receivers we are supplying with the system, which we call the base station, is we're trying to ride all tracks and give the customers the ability to choose which operating mode they need. It always comes with a solar panel, which is integrated on the box. In most countries, that will run the device throughout the year. In the Nordic countries, the winter is difficult. There will be shortages, but you can also apply a 12-volt power mm-hmm. socket unit onto the device and keep it running. We also have a separate device, which we called the Polar Night Package, which is a box of batteries with also a second solar panel. And that will then keep the system running throughout the dark winter years.
Have to remember that there's not much growing or to be monitored during those very dark period of time. But yes, we can carry on the data transmission all through that period.
And maybe a quite stupid question. How do you find the sensor? Maybe you digged it in and you forgot where you digged it, in which place. Do you indicate somehow, or how can you find them back? If they are maybe...
Yeah, it's not a stupid question at all, because we have a lot of examples where the customer is calling us that I can't find my sensor. Is there any way to locate it? So the rule of thumb is that you always need to measure the location when installing it, at least the very approximate location, either taking up measurements from a known point or using GPS or similar. Then when you have the approx location, you can use metal detector to find the really exact point where the sensor is located.
But usually there is no need to pick them up once you've installed them, you've had them, and you do not want to remove them because you want a continuous data series from year to year, and you want the values to be comparable. We do have customers such as carrot farmers who work on rental lands. They work every year on a different field. They always bury down the sensors and pick them up before harvest. And for them, there is a small hole in the device so that they can attach a plastic string to it. That was actually a demand from one of our customers. Could he actually drill a hole to the sensor to put a string on it? We said, absolutely don't drill the device. although there is a location you can drill a hole, and it immediately became a standard feature of our product.
That's a great solution.
And I was thinking, your sensors, the data you're collecting, the sensors, is good for the farmer, but is this data also being shared with you, or are you also sharing it with research institutes? Like in Helsinki or in Tampere, there's a lot of research being done at the universities on soil measurement, climate measurement. Are you also sharing the data with them?
The data, not so much. Of course, we have our own server, which is the portal where our customers can view and manage their data. They have the right to do pretty much anything they like with the data, but it stays on our server because we're also helping them with troubleshooting and other issues related to the data. And we're giving them advice on how to react on the data, which is why we also have access to it. Actually, research institutes, research farms were the most predominant customers in our early years. There are not many trial farms in Finland not having sensors from us at the moment. Just selling the data, which our customers essentially are paying for, has not been in our intentions so far. Every now and then I get interviews from different magazines asking what does the soil moisture look like across Finland. I do give some general idea, but we're very cautious of the data integrity and the ownership of our data. We do not discuss our customers' data unless we have agreed of a commercial.
But how about scientific research institutes? You know, maybe if they would like to work with you, like becoming a new customer direction, you know, for you. What did you think about?
We have many scientific research customers, mm-hmm. many in Finland, in Estonia. We're working with the Landwirtschaftskammer in Germany. We have several research trials running in the United States. And it's not like they're trying our solution. They're using our solution to do their own research.
Right.
That makes sense. Absolutely. And since you have so much data of your clients and everything, and especially with your monitoring services, do you also offer guidance on, for example, to farmers or somebody using your parameters and using your comparative data on how to improve their production or how to improve or reduce their use of fertilizers and things like that?
Proactively, no. However, we do publish a lot of material. We have written many white papers on how to identify field capacity and the optimal moisture conditions of each location. How to act on the temperature data, for example. It's very good for timing of seeding, timing of pesticide control, how to make sure the soil temperature is right for fertilization, which is a huge step forward from looking at your thermometer for the air temperature, which has nothing really correlating with the root zone. But on top of that, when our customers reach out to us, then we, of course, always take a look at their data, give our own assessment on what we're seeing and help them in interpreting the data. That we do on a constant basis.
And of course, at the time of installation, when the solution is being installed, we provide the training, how to interpret the numbers, the graphs. We configure it ready for their soils and their use in particular crops. So that should be handled already in the beginning.
As a result of the processes we've built onto our server, there is a method which is our own proprietary method, which we call the water balance. There are simple methods of understanding the dynamic moisture data to identify which are the optimal conditions, where is the wilting point, and dialing in those numbers turns out our fairly sophisticated number system into traffic lights. So in every location, the farmer can make sure that the soil stays on green. When it goes to yellow, something has to be done. When it goes to red, there will be severe crop losses. And any farmer in the present day will be perfectly capable of dealing with that system just by themselves without our help.
But this is...
Just sorry, go ahead. A bit. It's been mentioned throughout our partners, let's say irrigation providers and such, when they've seen those traffic lights we provide, they are like, oh, wow, why we didn't make that?
I mean, if you get a number, it says 31%. Would you know that whether that's a good or bad number? Well, the answer is it depends on your soil type, but we can exclude all those question marks and basically remove the guesswork from irrigation.
Yeah, and this comes to my question is that, number one, you mentioned you have the traffic light system. Number two, we are now going into climate change. So a lot of climate is changing. Are you also using your data to, for example, to make a prediction to the farmer that, oh, your groundwater has gone down so much that you may be facing a drought or things like that, and warn the farmer?
Basically, yes. The underground moisture is a combination of multiple events. There is groundwater rise, there is precipitation, and with previous methods, farmers have been forced to understand the groundwater conditions, try to make a calculation of evaporation, transpiration, take into consideration weather and wind, sunshine, to understand what the water consumption at the moment is and trying to replenish that with their irrigation. It's a very complicated thing, and most of all, it's completely incapable of addressing the in-field variations because every location in a field has the same weather. So seeing the number in the underground is kind of agnostic to whether that water came from the groundwater or the weather or the irrigation. It's still the number which is telling how the plant is experiencing the conditions.
However, that is something we have in mind by combining those different models, like ET models, and understanding the soil characteristics and the water availability with the current data. Then using certain IE models, we are able to make certain predictions and let's say 2 or 3 weeks horizon, how we would estimate the soil to act.
And we've done this exercise with a potential partner. By looking at our measurement history and the weather history, we're able to combine how this location reacts to weather, and then being able to say, okay, if this weather happens in the 14 upcoming days, this will then be your soil moisture.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that was very interesting, but very technical. Yeah. Let's dive now into your business model and impact. How do you guys differentiate from your competitors, if you have any?
We have few competitors. If we look solely the underground space, there are hardly any other sensors that could be buried underground. We've seen some in sports. The differentiation is pretty simple. We are the only technology that can go deep underground. We have superior battery lifetime. I think the nearest competitor is like 1/4 of what we provide. We are also the only one with that battery lifetime giving that near real-time data. So we can provide that either every 5 minutes, 10 minutes or 20 minutes, which is the standard version. We also don't need any connectivity or SIM cards within the sensors. All the data is collected to the receiver, which is then connected to the network. So there are quite a few of them. Then looking at the software side. So again, we provide that real-time view. It's not a historical data. It's your current data at that time. Also, all that data can be shared through an open API to any third-party system. So that data can be integrated different farm management systems. It can be integrated with irrigation management systems or any such a system that would benefit of the data.
Our main competitor actually is not measuring the soil because other technologies have been so laborious and so hard to use and complicated that farmers have decided they're not feasible enough.
Are you using also this philosophy, you know, how you say, I usually say it in impact measurement course, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it, right? Is it something that you're also using?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very core of our pitch and my favorite quote. It's just impossible. If you take a handful of soil, you can estimate whether it has a moisture or not. Then you go to the field or course on the following day, take another handful of soil. Can you really feel the difference? But mm-hmm. but having the number removes that guesswork. And only having the number gives you something to compare with. And that's the trick.
Absolutely. Measuring impact and the soil is very important. And guys, can you briefly tell us what's your business model?
Our business model is based as we are providing both hardware and software. So the hardware can be purchased from us. So once the customer wants to have the solution, they purchase the hardware and they pay us a yearly subscription for the data and software use, having all of their fingertips.
And are you looking for investors right now?
Thanks for asking. Actually, we are very much so. So a couple of last years has been time for rapid growth, but also renewing the solution we have. During that time, we have expanded a lot. Today, we have offices here in Finland, also in the UK. So now we are looking to raise up to 6 to 7 million euro and finalize the round, hopefully during this year. And with that investment, we are looking to scale up the company even faster, setting up the people and teams in the US, followed by Middle East, East Asia, and Australia.
Okay. And do you also, does Solid Scout also rely on partners for execution of your services, or are you looking for partners?
We are. So partners are very essential in all aspects of our business. All the way from R&D and production, we constantly look to new partners, provide the needed components, new type of sensors, or adding even different type of a data to our portfolio. We work with partners. Our main business model is to sell throughout the reselling partners. Today, we have around more than 20 resellers around the world, which are now added around one per month more. So we need more. We look more resellers. We look partners, especially in the ag sector, and the kind of a partners that would be able to create the need and hunger for data, because only with the current data we can make that serious impact. So if the current environment, especially in the ag, is that we are using the different farming inputs as much as we can, and we need regulations to control the use of farming inputs. By having that data, you can start really optimizing the use of not only water, but also the added chemicals and fertilizers, and make both serious savings and a huge impact for the environment.
Absolutely.
And even in locations where water is abundant, there are such places in the world, irrigation still requires a lot of energy. And in some cases, actually, the energy related to water distribution is the most important things to optimize.
Right. So what are your plans, guys, for the next 5 years? Where do you see Solid Scout in 5 years?
I could see the vision is to have the underground weather from all over the world, so that we would have the sensors installed nearly every field across the world. That may not be true in 5 years. So being a bit more realistic, I mentioned those next expansion areas. So we're gonna grow the business, scale up the company, and especially get all the people to understand the value of the data, get them addicted to use it so that they can enjoy the benefits when they get to optimize the use of all the different inputs. So I would say that in 5 years, we are the Google of underground IoT. We are known as a company that gives you the critical soil data to your fingertips, you to optimize all your farming activities, or whether that's the work you do on a sports field or golf course.
Awesome. I love that big vision, of course. But tell us more a bit about impact. Like, how do you see, what's the impact of Solar Scout if you can connect it with sustainable development goals of United Nations?
I would say that within the sustainability goals, we quite easily meet at least 6 of them. So if thinking of the very direct impact we help the customers to achieve is to optimize their water use. Mm-hmm. Knowing that agriculture alone accounts 70% of all freshwater use globally. It's also known fact that up to 50% of all that water use is over irrigation. And the logic is clear. It is more safe to over irrigate than under irrigate. So water is wasted. And when it's been over irrigated, all the different fertilizers, nutrients, and chemicals are being flushed, and there's a certain runoff to environment. So thinking of those facts, and the chain goes on and on and on, all the proactive field management, we tackle the zero hunger, because using all the different inputs wisely gives more for everybody. Also, we help with the clean water goal. So when the water is used optimally, we have clean water for everybody. We help to build sustainable cities. We've seen the droughts in Central Europe, and how suddenly in France they have loads of cities without drinking water. All the irrigation is suddenly prohibited in farming, city parks, and also golf courses. So there's a growing need also in sustainable cities to show that they are responsible in their use of inputs and water use. We heavily tackle the climate action, and of course help to keep up the life on land. Yeah. And the last would be then the responsible consumption. We may not help with people buying less stuff, but we definitely help them to be more responsible when consuming these mentioned inputs.
Most of the international crises we're seeing at the moment do have at least a link, if not a direct cause, in water shortages. Yeah. And it may feel quite astonishing that we feel there's not enough water for agriculture production, for food feeding the people, while at the same time those who are irrigating too much. So if we can really increase the water use efficiency, actually then the same amount of water should be more than enough to sustain the food production we need.
I have a very good question, which I think we all forgot. How much does it cost?
That depends. You can have a starter kit with just the 4,000 euro, start using it, which would give you the needed data for your, let's say, 10 hectare field or a sports stadium. Then if you are planning to make a full installation to your 200 hectare field, that's pretty much just give us a call and let's negotiate.
And it's one time or it is yearly?
It's both. So for the hardware, it's one time, and then we carry on a small subscription of the software and data use.
Mm-hmm. And my next question would be that since you exist already quite some years, so what are the main challenges you are facing or you think you will face in the future, and how are you planning to tackle them?
We have tackled quite a few of different kind of challenges over the time. We've had some production failures. We have had wrong recruitments, and it's a constant learning. So at the moment, I would say that we're in the position that already talented people, they want to work with us. So we kind of achieved a certain level with our brand and the name. But then again, it's always about the people. So having the right people, having talented people in right positions, that's the main problem always.
Right. And maybe one more question on marketing, because it's very important to reach to your potential customers. So what are your marketing strategies which you plan to use or which you're currently using? How do you reach to people?
We use our existing customers a lot. So we have that 400 customers which are happy customers. They are giving happily testimonials, how they feel about using the data. Just to mention that tweet Johannes told earlier, how customer is marketing their potatoes, which they wouldn't have without Soil Scout. So we use that customer marketing and word of mouth a lot, and use that also for our branding, so that we get the wide audience to understand, first of all, why this is important, and then later on get them addicted to use it.
I would actually go a step further. Our customers are not just happy customers. They are proud of being our customers. I've witnessed a couple of times just noticing two farmers talking to each other, and the other one says, yeah, but I measure my soil condition. And the other one looks up, oh, so you actually know what you're doing. And it's kind of a contagious customer.
That's so cool.
You sound very Finnish. I was just thinking that, how is your production and the scalability? So for example, tomorrow, if some very big organization from India or somebody wants your product, and you know,
they want 1 million of Soil Scouts. Can you manage that?
Can you scale? Well, can you produce?
To be realistic, 1 million, that's a lot. And we know that we have a global component shortage. So we probably would need to negotiate certain delivery time. But about the scalability and current production, we have quite a few contract manufacturers actually building and assembling our products. So it's not on our internal activity that we would have a sweatshop somewhere, which we did have at some point. So there are quite a few contract manufacturers building those sensors. They have production lines that could be scaled up. And as we already tested that model, it's quite easy to add up new manufacturers just doing the same.
If I would try to explain you what kind of a genius our CTO Jussi Sirkia is, we would need another session. But you can imagine he has built up our production tools, our electronic testers. We've got all the 3D print files of those. We could easily ship the building instructions of our production tools to any location in the world, and they could be up and running next week.
But wow. That would also be kind of a partners, group of partners we are looking for, a suitable contract manufacturers who have knowledge about IoT, but also kind of a molding processes, as this is encapsulated with polyurethane. We also look for irrigation companies. We look for farm management system companies to partner up with, so that they would also benefit from this unique data we provide.
Jalmari, Johannes, how can our audience support you in your mission?
Depending on the audience, there's quite a few kind of a help we need. First of all, we look serious investors to join this great journey into success. We look for different kind of a partners that were mentioned. And of course, we ask for people to use more data to optimize their use of inputs. So remember always that you can only manage what you measure.
And now that people tend to know that radio waves don't travel from the underground, we hope that everyone who finds out that there is a way would then go back to their drawing boards and thinking of what are their needs to communicate with something in the underground. As I mentioned, we've got multiple projects going on with making wireless seismic sensors, inclination sensors, early landslide warning systems, cable and pipeline monitoring systems. There's all kinds of information in the underground, which is not accessible at this time, but we can help anyone with those tasks.
That's a good point.
And your whole production is in Finland?
Yes, currently everything is produced in Finland.
Perfect.
That sounds amazing. Do you want to share one more call to action to our global audience as a tradition?
One topic we didn't touch yet is that no matter what you're growing, I mean, if you're a farmer or a green superintendent, still you're growing grass or landscaping or anything. It's an industry which has been relying on tradition. And I would know, I'm the 19th farmer on our farm. But the thing is that at the moment, resources are getting more expensive. We would need to feed a growing population. And at the same time, the climate is changing. So now farmers are trying to blindfold, aim at the target, which is moving. And actually the historical, traditional information they have is no longer usable. So the only way forward is to be able to measure and act on what's actually going on. And there are really no farmers around the world that wouldn't benefit from our solution. So anything that can help us grow and expand will also help the whole world.
That was amazing.
Yeah, because you answered one of the most important factors we are meeting now is food security.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So
thank you very, very much.
The time is running out, guys. Thank you for joining us today and sharing your mission, product, and everything what you need. So as a little thank you, we'd like to give you a honorary membership on Chamomile Impact Community Platform and also Impact Leader Certificate.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys. See you in Finland, I guess.
Yeah, soon.
Welcome anytime.
You have to go now because soon it will get all dark and cold.
Bring your keys.
Thank you now.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
So, dear viewers, with this, we finished the 9th episode of season 5. Next week, we will be back with one of the major multinationals who are doing amazing work in the field of supporting and facilitating impactful and sustainable businesses worldwide.
So please do not forget to subscribe on our YouTube channel, easy.youtube.com/SwissImpact, and then you will be kept updated with all newest information.
And we invite all impactful businesses to come to our TV show in case you're impactful, of course. And also, if you want to sponsor, please get in touch with us and we would be happy to have you and provide you a branding in Swiss impact industry.
Exactly.
And at the end, you get more when you give back.
So always invest with impact.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Hi, we hope you enjoyed this episode of TV show, Swiss Impact with Banerjees.
Make sure you check out the next one and also find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Spotify, podcasts, and any of your favorite social media places.
And please subscribe to our channel so you know when we release new episodes.
And also leave us some feedback to help us grow this awesome impact community. And join it.
We look forward to sharing the next episodes with you. And until then, you get more when you give back.
So always invest with impact.